Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the title for our lecture is today is Meaning of Sacrifice. This is to prepare our minds and hearts for the great universal festival that Hindus are going to celebrate on Friday, Mahashivaratri. In fact, last week, last Sunday, we had a lecture on reflections on Patanjali's Yoga Aphorism, Yoga Sutras. Then we found out that it is through Raja Yoga that one can control his mind, especially his desires and passions. Then enable himself to unite or yoke himself with the divine parent within him. In a perfected yogi, the conjunction between manas and buddhi is supposed to be permanent. Then in that case, his third eye is made active or activated. And the whole lecture on Yoga Aphorism or Yoga Sutras were really trying to give us more by which you can control the modification of the thinking mind. And it is talking about yogis. Today it's not premeditated, it is theosophical coherence again. We are talking, going to see some aspect of the yogi of yogis, the Mahadeva, who is called the great sacrifice. Now before we can go and see what are the aspects and what relationship man has, or the cosmos has, with this Mahadeva, we would like to, because the title is given as Meaning of Sacrifice, we will see its cosmic meaning, general meaning, how it's related to Shiva in those sense. Unfortunately, in the past several centuries, the real meaning of sacrifice has been lost. It originally meant to make sacred. That is, to make life itself sacred. That is, in other words, through this holy divine living, then we can transform, transmute, incorruptible to incorruptible, temporal to the eternal. Oftentimes we feel, that means in other words, by so living the higher life, you make this tabernacle is as a fitting place to, for the abiding of the inner dehi or kshetra. As your body is a temple of the living God, it is said. Now, you see, oftentimes we find today, most of the people saying, I have sacrificed my life for everything, for my children, this and that, what do I have? Or I've sacrificed my life to theosophy, what have I got in return? Some people do say that, yes. Is that real? But what kind of sacrifice? Is it real sacrifice? Let's see. A merchant or a businessman whose heart is set on making money, therefore he sacrifices life, time and energy in order to acquire wealth and power. Likewise, a workman who works in the factory 8 hours or 12 hours sacrifices time and energy in order to earn a living which will enable him to have shelter, clothes and food, not only for himself but the family. He also says, I'm sacrificing for the family. The parents feel that they are sacrificing their time and energy for the welfare of their children. They also say, I'm sacrificing. The mother sacrifices her entire right sleep for the sake of the infant. You know, these are all various kinds of sacrifices, partial, in one sense. Therefore, they are not the real sacrifice. Then what is it that is real sacrifice to which Shiva is connected? It is your whole life. The whole life is nothing but a continuous process of change for perfection. That is creation. And that creation is this spontaneous joy of giving birth to beings and worlds. This transmutation, in other words, is the transmutation of darkness into light, ignorance into intelligence. This is the whole process of becoming. And therefore, there is that aspect in us which urges on all the time to be a perfect man, to be perfect, to go march forward. This is the evolutionary process. This is a necessary thing in the process of evolution. This is through which humankind comes to be. Therefore, this is a process, the evolution of humanity itself, the spontaneous generation of everything. There is that aspect. Without that aspect of that need, necessity in life, you won't be able to go forward. But had not the great beings, Agnishvataputri, sacrificed their very essence, we would not be here as men. Had not the Parashivapitris, the lower pitris, given us their chaya, we wouldn't have the bodies today. And even today, in order to keep our body alive, to maintain it properly, there are so many lower beings and lives which maintain our body, depending upon how we use those lives. Therefore, in other words, what happens is that life itself is a great sacrifice. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you see, I am Adiyajna in this body. The very coming into being, the matter, the spirit descending into matter itself is a great yajna, sacrifice. Now, this means this sacrifice is nothing but an aspect of life itself. See, this is a clear indication or perception of that sparkling energy in the stream of life itself. And some people have called it, some adepts have called it, this is the way, the truth and life. And it is said when you combine or embody these three, you become a Mahatma. That is, the sparkling germ should shine forth and manifest itself in this body, which alone can make this animal man to divine human man, and human man into divine man. Therefore, while this Mahatma, as we have the reading today, the Mahatmas are looked upon where? To help and guidance to Yogeshwara, the Mahadeva, under whose instruction and guidance, under whose shelter these people have grown. You will read the paragraph of Secret Document. Magnificent passage is there. Now, you see, there is a little passage which is wonderful. See, a mother goes to a sage and asks him, what is the meaning of sacrifice? I have not understood. She says, O sage, I seek enlightenment. I would know what is the law of sacrifice. The sage, it is a law that fills the whole of life. But thou needest to hear no letter of that law. So means that you lived. I mean, there is no this thing. Thy life is to formulate, is formulate of sacrifice. Then she says, look, I am doing so many things. My children have not learned the very art of the significance of sacrifice. There are various questions and answers. Then one significant answer is given. My mother says, is there not some first step in holy living that might clear their soul's bright mission? But she is talking worried about children. The sage says, the first step toward noble sacrifice, even in the household life, is the covenant of participation. Covenant means there is an agreement. Between what? Between incarnate consciousness, that, and the higher self in us, which drives us. Thou hast made unto thy children all the endowment hitherto. They unknowing have sacrificed their right to serve and share the sacrifice. Make engagement then together for participation, each one a sharer in the common wheel of home, to give some time, some duty now given or performed by thee. Thou should have thy just share. It is not even justice that renders less or more than justice to each one. Flinch not. Each one at first may feel the irk of unaccustomed aptitude, but it's due to establishment of cycle. Pleasure will arise. The bright face of duty will appear. The humble pride of well-assumed responsibility. What was once a sacrifice will be to them like your joy. I mean, this is one the ordinary way of putting it. But now, having seen this, now, who is the very great guru who guides all these, instructs all these yogis and spirits? Is Shiva. But unfortunately, we don't find the word name Shiva at all in the Vedic times. During the Vedic times, he was called only as Rudra. So we will say Rudra Shiva. Rudra Shiva is both maleficent and beneficent. The very words when they come into being, it is the act of Shiva, arousing the kama, that desire which arose in it, which makes it to come out from the subjective state to objective state. And it is the same Shiva, the destroyer. It has when the cosmos ends, then it destroys it. Only to regenerate it again during another manantara. This goes on constant. This is at the cosmic level. That is, constantly destroying and then destroying the form and regenerating. And this aspect of Rudra, we have to understand, appreciate. This not only affects the cosmos, it is also around us and in us. He lives in our passions. In order that we'll be enabled to control the passions and desires, to arouse that kind of a Shiva which enables us to become a yogi at last. And Shiva Rudra, so many things are talked about, the various things. We think it is one of the Trimurtis, the third Trimurti of Brahma Vishnu Shiva. But it's much more. It is because of him. In the world, everything is sustained. Everything is transformed. Everything is regenerated. Then is it only a deity, peculiar to Hindu pantheon? Our literature says no. It's universal deity. There are identical personages in the Greek teachings, in the Egyptian teachings, in the Chaldean teachings, and also in the Jewish teachings. We have the name of Ptah, Python, and Seth in Egyptian teachings. We have the name of Baal in the Chaldean teachings. We have Saturn, Kronos, in the Greek teachings, and so on and so forth. Jehovah in the Jewish teachings. And even the Vahan or the vehicle of Maheshwara or Shiva, the Nandi is represented there also as bull. So what is this Nandi? Nandi is that base element in us, that untamed animal which represents the passion and desires, which the entire passion and desires have been conquered by Shiva, therefore he rides on it. This is what you will find in especially Shiva temples if you go. The innermost prahara, the deity will be there. Just in front of it, Nandi will be there. And unless the Nandi is removed, you can't see the deity at all. There's a significance there. The base thing has to be conquered. Completely crushed before we can see the deity in the seventh innermost sanctorums, seventh sanctorum. Now, have you seen this? He said he is much more than that. The three things. There is one story, legend in fact. During the night of Brahma, once, there is harmony reigning everywhere. Universe has not yet come out. It's still asleep. Then you see, Brahma saw that somebody lying in the waters of space. Narayana, floating. Then suddenly he asked, who are you? And then Narayana said, I am Vishnu, from whose navel you have come out. And he addressed it as Chait. When he said Chait, this angered Brahma. He said, I am everything, I am the, without me nothing can be created and all that. Then there was a tug of war. Battle between the two, saying who is superior and who is inferior. This was going on for some time, then suddenly they saw a column of fire. Without beginning, without end. And they were wondering, who is this column of fire, what is this? Therefore, what Vishnu said, I will take the form of Varaha, that is boar, go down. And Brahma said, I will take the form of swan and fly up. Even then they could not find. And then suddenly they saw Shiva. And Shiva said, he laughed and said, look here, there is no one superior or inferior. All three are necessary, they are one. That is creation, preservation, and destruction. And regeneration. Then they kept quiet. There is another legend, and in fact it's about the various things. Shiva, to which Shiva's name is also attached. One is that when the churning of ocean took place, then what happened was there is both amrita and also poison. Then in order to save mankind, that's why he's compassion incarnate. He's an embodying divine compassion, Shiva. Shiva drank the poison. And then it's said in one of the stories that Parvati held it tight in his throat so that it doesn't enter the body. But for his swallowing the poison, we have in our reading today, but for their sacrifice, humanity would have been in a worse place. Then had he not drunk the poison, then what would, where would humanity be? Therefore, he is supposed to be the incarnation of divine compassion also. Then we said, he is in us and outside of ourselves. He is that aspect in us which always urges on to go forward, to proceed, or to make efforts to become a perfect being. Now, he is famous for his dhamar, drum. What does the drum signify? It is a drum which wakes up everything to life. From subjectivity to objectivity, it is the drum, the waking. It is in fact correlated with the verbum or logos, word made flesh. And it is actually also correlated in one place, pranava. It is very sound, which is the keynote of nature, which we find everywhere. And it is that harmonious music that you find in life. That in the past says, there's a music, a harmony, music in the life. You should cultivate your ears to listen to it. Listen to the song of life, it is said. It is that song, the Shiva's drum. Just like Krishna's flute, he is calling all the people to become perfect. To see that the personality is crushed, overcome, and to become a perfect being. And then you see there is another thing, great symbol. It's an Atraja symbol, a statue. Where Shiva is supposed to be standing on one foot. And with four hands. And he is standing on a dwarf, representing a puny petty man. Now, you see, one hand he holds fire. In another hand, he holds a dhamar or a drum. The third hand, you see, pointing towards down. The third hand is mudra. And the fourth hand is pointing towards down. I mean, there, in fact, the story goes, there are seven meanings to it. They are only trying to give one meaning. You see, one hand is supposed to be also holding a trishul. But we were talking about this particular thing, where he is pointing it down. The hand which holds the dhamaru means the activities all the time created by his sound. Wakens up everybody through the word. Then the hand that holds the flame is the flame, fire of knowledge. It is the fire of knowledge that alone can cut asunder all doubts. Jnanati Dagdaha, says the fourth chapter Gita. It is through the spirit knowledge, by fire of spiritual knowledge, you can cut asunder all these doubts. He says we have in the fourth chapter. And the other one is mudra. That means abhaya, fearlessness. If you take refuge in me, there won't be anything. Nobody will do so. Which is the Lord of Self, refuge in Self. The Self is the Lord of Self. What better Lord could there be? And the one pointing down to the dwarf means, yes, the man, puny petty man, has to be conquered. Therefore, he has conquered, mastered all passions and desires, standing in it. This also represents another tribulation, the Vamana. We don't go into it. Then, here's the red, one snake running through his neck. The snake represents poison, which he has swallowed. The other serpent stands dragon of wisdom. And then his hair is braided and bedecked with a lot of jewels and all that. The braiding of her represents tremendous strength. We have heard the story in the Bible of Samson having tremendous power. There is something to it, you see. And the bedecked jewels are represented as the spiritual knowledge. pearls of knowledge, various things are there. This is one of the things. And the positive standard means tandava, standing always, see that dancing, which keeps everything in equilibrium. There are some other stories also, like once it so happened that Parvati, in a sort of joking or a jocular way, she went behind him and closed his eyes with her fingers, hands. The world completely collapsed. In the sense there was no life. And it is said Vishnu, Brahma and other gods went and begged of him. And with great difficulty they managed to revive him. Another thing is he was carrying when Sati as a dead body. Then also everything collapsed. Then it is said Vishnu and Brahma came and destroyed the body so that life could be revived. And it is also indicated in one story that I think Parvati or Uma, I don't remember, was trying to entice him or trying to draw his attention. She wanted to marry him. And then Cupid helped her. That is Kama. And then therefore what happened at that time, Shiva is supposed to open his third eye and completely destroy Kamadeva. There is a beautiful passage in the, about Kamadeva in the glossary. I have not got the glossary here. There it says it is the divine love that first arose in it, in the germ, in the primeval germ of mind. It is that it connects entity with non-entity. Then all the people, when Kama was destroyed, evolution could not proceed forward. Without desire, nothing can go forward. Therefore it is said that when all the gods and everybody went to him and asked, pleaded with him, please revive, then he is supposed to have revived him as formless. Now it is ananga, formless. Therefore it is unable for us to catch him and put him in our pocket. It is formless. That's why if you don't know where the Kama is very much there in each and every one of us. It is that, the lower aspect of Kama, is that pulling us, making us more selfish, more sensuous. It is that which prevents us from getting away from the life of senses into that of life eternal. That's why it is said, the voice of silence, you have the life of personality in order to live in spirit. But in order to do that, you have to require, you need the help of Shiva, the Tantava. This is the whole problem, see. And there are several other stories also. Now, see, somebody reading quotations we have clearly help us. He is supposed to be progenitor or yogi of yogis or the great guru, patron saint of third, fourth and fifth races. He is supposed to be the gardener who weeds, who removes all the weeds like a scavenger and then helps us to control our passions and desires. See, some of the quotations we will read, we will understand. The Shiva, the destroying deity, evolution and progress personified. We saw in the very initial stage how Shiva represents very evolution itself. Without him, nothing can evolve. Who is regenerated at the same time? Who destroys things under one form, but recall it to life under another form? As you said earlier, you need to destroy the form. Then in another place, secret doctrine says, all are from secret doctrine. Shiva, Rudra is the destroyer, as Vishnu is the preserver. And both are regenerators of spiritual as well as physical nature. This is very important. The spiritual nature is looked after by Shiva, please. Shiva opens our eyes from the physical perception or physical perception makes us open our eye to spiritual perception. To live as a plant, the seed must die. You see, unless seed dies, we can't get a plant. Unless the plant dies, we can't get leaf. Then unless leaf dies, we can't get the flower. Unless the flower dies, we can't get the fruit. Unless the fruit dies, seed cannot come. This is a cycle. The evolution cycle itself is controlled by, yes, birth, growth, death. These are three aspects all the time there. To live as a conscious entity in the eternity, the passions and senses of the man must first die. Where are we today? We are predominantly, yes, influenced by karma. Unfortunately, karma happens to the middle principle, which drags us out. There is another portion of karma also, the karma deva, the divine desire, which has to be aroused, which alone, when we control the mind and its lower passions and desires and selfishness, then we will be able to look up to our divine parent, Atman, the Jivanas. I mean, it's both, you see, that's why if man is said to be walking in this razor's edge. He can be either pulled down by karma, become worse than an animal, or he can gravitate consciously towards the divine parent, depending upon how much control you have on the mind. That is why last week we saw during the lecture. To live is to die and die is to live has been too little understood in the West. Shiva, the destroyer, is the creator, the savior of spiritual man. Destroyer of royal personality and savior of spiritual man. As he is the good gardener of nature, he weeds out the plants, human and cosmic, and kills the passions of the physical to call to life the perceptions of the spiritual man. This is a very, very beautiful passage. Then it's also seen. Shiva Kumara represents only allegorically the human race. In fact, the next quotation, I think, one quotation comes, where the color of the races also is given, depending upon this third race, fourth race, or fifth race. The Kumaras, that's why I said, these are all Maruts. Maruts, the sons of Maruts are Kumaras. These are all supposed to be, you see, lumps of flesh, to which life was given by Shiva. Shiva Kumara represents only allegorically human races during the genesis of man. The Kumaras, as mind-born sons of Brahma Rudra, see Brahma Rudra, are Shiva, the howling and terrific destroyer of human passions and physical senses, which are ever in the way of development of higher spiritual perception and growth of inner eternal man. That is why the important thing is to control the modifications of thinking. It's all the time clouded over, influenced by karma. Unless, you see, the mind is even temporarily removed, released from karma, it cannot become an organ of free will in man. This is important. That is why concentration, meditation and all that comes in. I mean, it's a daily sadhana or discipline we have to undertake. I mean, before come to concentration and all that, there are several steps also. Yamani, Yamayasana, etc., etc. Last week we heard that. Mystically, or the progeny inner eternal man, which are ever in the way of development of the higher spiritual perception and growth of the inner eternal man. Mystically, his mind-born sons are the progeny of Shiva, the Mahayogi, the great patron of all yogis and mystics in India. They themselves become being virgin ascetics, refuse to create the material being man. They were called Kumaras, the Agnishvata Pitrus. Well, may they be suspected of a direct connection with the Christian archangel Michael, the virgin combatant of dragon Apophis, whose victim is every soul united too loosely with the immortal spirit. The angel, who, as shown by the Gnostic, refused to create as Kumaras did. Then this is regarding the four races that we get. These sacred four, who have been allegorized and symbolized in the Linga Purana, there are various Puranas in Shiva. Lingas Purana, Shiva Purana, which states and Vamadeva, Shiva, as Kumara, is reborn in each Kalpa, as four youths, four white, four red, four yellow, four dark brown. Look at the various colors of the races. Let us remember that Shiva is preeminently and chiefly an ascetic, patron of all yogis and adepts. And the allegory will become clearer, more comprehensible. It is the spirit of divine wisdom, chaste asceticism itself, which incarnation these elect. That itself, the essence is there, the elect. It is only after getting married and becoming, being dragged by the gods from his terrible ascetic life that Rudra becomes Shiva, a god, and not one of a very virtuous and merciful type in the Hindu pantheon. Now, this we have seen, these are all from Sikh doctrine. We will read one more passage, which is magnificent, perhaps as a closing thought. Then, what does the master write about the great Shiva? He says, the very first sentence, the adept sees and feels and lives in the very source of all fundamental truths. What is that? Where does he live? What is the atmosphere or the air that he breathes in? The very source of all fundamental truths. The universal spiritual essence of nature. Shiva, the creator, destroyer, regenerator. The universal spiritual essence of nature. That Akasha realm itself must be throbbing with this kind of spiritual nature. Nature alone can incarnate the spirit of limitless contemplation. Very magnificent. Nature alone can incarnate the spirit of limitless contemplation. That Shiva alone can do that. Absorbed in absolute self-unconsciousness of physical self, not aware of physical self at all. Can we do it even for a single minute? With so-called meditation and all that, we do that. Plunge in the depths of true being. This is merged, one with all. Which is no being but eternal universal life. His whole form as immovable and void as eternal summits of snow in Kailasha, where he sits above care, above sorrow, above sin and worldliness, a mendicant. Each one has to become a mendicant. Renounce all things. The very first verse in the Ishavasya Upanishad. When you renounce everything, you know the reality of God. We don't want anything, do we? And we have in the canto of happiness, where Buddha says, we who possess nothing, and we make a big fuss about the body. Do we own our body? We got it from Mother Nature, we are going to give it back to Mother Nature. We don't realize that. Then he says, eternal submission, so where he sits about care, about sorrow, about sin, about worldliness, a mendicant, a beggar, a sage, a healer. Some of the great Arabs can heal of your bad elements if you deserve that kind of a thing. King of kings, that's why it's called Yogeshwara, yogi of yogis. Such is the ideal Shiva of Yoga Shastras, the culmination of spiritual wisdom. That means he embodies very spiritual wisdom itself. But for his spiritual wisdom and that ideal constant contemplation, perhaps he would have been in worse condition today. That Shiva is there. Don't remember. Don't forget that he is all the time there. Enabling us, yes, to control our passions and desires. But it also, unfortunately, he is also in passions. In the form of lower passions and desires, he will be ever pulling us back. There are various things about this in the Tandava. There is one more thing which is important for us to understand. There are three kinds of Tandava or dance. One is the cosmic dance, which enables universes to come in. That Damaru or the drum, the sound of drum, creates, yes, cosmos out of chaos. This is the cosmic dance. At the highest level, before universes come out. The other second dance is Tandava. It's also called Tandava. Then that is the dance on the gods, burning gods. It is representing destruction of evil. There is another story which talks about a skull being all the time beside Shiva, which represents destruction of evil. Then this That's why he's associated with burning gods, of a frequenter of burning gods, it is said. The third is the Tandava, the Nataraja dance. That dance which keeps the universe in equilibrium, in rhythm. And this is very famous in Chidambaram. It's called the secret of Chidambaram. We'll come to that. He's a contemplator, a dancer, creator, savior of spiritual man, Tandava, divine dance. Then, here we would like to read what great writers and the thinkers have written about this. Ananda Kumar Swami is a brilliant person who was the late curator of New York Museum. Describes a very learned man. Describes Nataraja as the dance of cosmic Shiva, dance of Shiva, widely accepted. Fruits of Kapra, 1974. It also comes in Tower of Six. Says the dancing Shiva is the dancing universe, the ceaseless flow of energy going through infinite variety of patterns that melt into one another. There is not that kind of a melting. It's what he said earlier when he talked about general pattern of sacrifice. It's a stream of that sparkling life energy that is there all the time. Actually, it is the function of four. Chidambaram. And they write Chit consciousness. Ambaram means cosmos or cosmic consciousness. The Chit Chidambaram is there in Chidambaram, where it is said, you see, that is a secret. Secret of the Chidambaram. The secret is, if you see, there is absolutely screen, there is nothing behind. That is also being, that is supposed to, when you saw, nobody prays there. If you go and see that, if your consciousness is tuned to cosmic consciousness, you can know what it is. Chitsava, it is called, hall of consciousness. Only place for no one, nothing is worshipped. By the side of the enigmatic Chidambaram Rahasya or secret revelation of Chidambara, where Shiva is worshipped as formless Akashalingam. See, there is something called Akashalingam also. That means the entire top atmosphere just after manifestation, divine Akasha. The curtain Arupa are formless. He is supposed to represent Shivakami or that primordial, that Shakti, the primordial female energy who inspires and witnesses Shiva's cosmic dance. Shiva who creates and removes Maya. This is the written by, this is according to Ananda Kumar Swami. Then we will just close this with a couple of magnificent there are several other stories also which we have not gone into. But here she talks, H.V.P. talks about 7 degrees of initiation and the last degree is the sums of 5 minutes, etc. They're a bit technical. That is talking about 6th and 7th races. There will always be initiates and profane till the end of this minor manvantara. The present life cycle, the arhats of the fire mist of the 7th rung are but one remove from the root base of their hierarchy. That means root base of the hierarchy is much higher. The highest on earth and our terrestrial chain. This root base has a name which can only be translated by several compound words in English. What is the English compound word? The ever-living human banner. What does the symbol of banyan tree represent? It can shelter hundreds of people, thousands of people. And then its roots are above. Ashvattam Praharavya. Uddhamura Marashakam Ashvattam Praharavya. Whose roots are above and its branches are below. See, they say in the early part, you see, descended from a high region, they say, in the early part of the third age, before the separation of sexes of the third race. And this great being was there when the nursery of human adults were being formed, in the early part of the third race. Then he said, the being just referred to, just to remain nameless, because he's got empty names. He's also Avalokiteshvara. If you go to later chapters, you'll find. The nameless is the tree from which in subsequent ages all the great historically known sages and hierophants such as Rishi Kapila, Hermes, Enoch, Orpheus, etc. have branched off. As objective man, he is the mysterious, the profane, ever invisible, yet ever present personage. To whom? To adepts. About whose lives, legends are rife in the East, especially among the occultists and the students of sacred science. He changes his form, but ever remains the same. Then, and it is he again who holds sway over initiated adepts throughout the whole world. Now, this is the paragraph. Please reflect upon it. He is, as said, the nameless one, who has so many names, and yet whose nature, names and whose very nature are unknown. He is the initiator, called the great sacrifice. Everything comes from him. The whole humanity, third, fourth, fifth races are, he is the guide. For sitting at the threshold of light, he looks into from within the circle of darkness, which he will not cross, nor will he quit his post till the last day of his life cycle. He is there to see every struggling disciple crosses the ocean of samsara, comes to the other shore. He has nothing to learn in this world. Why does this solitary watcher remain at his self-chosen post? Why does he sit by the fountain of primeval wisdom? He is the primeval wisdom incarnate, of which he drinks no longer, as he has nothing not to learn which he does not know, yea, neither on this earth nor in its heaven. Because the lonely, sore-footed pilgrims on their way back to their home are never sure to the last moment of not losing their way in this limitless desert of illusion. And matter, called earth life, because he would fain show the way to that region of freedom and light from which he is a voluntarily exiled himself. There itself is a sacrifice. Why should he sit there? He is supposed to have descended from other great higher regions. To every prisoner who has succeeded in liberating himself from bonds of flesh and illusion, because in short, he has sacrificed himself for the sake of mankind, though but a few elect may profit by the great sacrifice. It is under the guidance of the great Guru Mahadeva, Yogi of Yogis, that early humanity, infant humanity, was taught the arts and sciences and spiritual knowledge. There's so much there. But anyway, please think about this. Go home, read those who have secret doctrine, read this paragraph. Meditate upon it. How many of us are prepared to take advantage of this? And therefore, what happens is, in fact, the celebration of Mahashivaratri is done in a very funny, peculiar manner in India. At least I can speak about South India. Various temples, what they do is, they mortify their flesh. And sometimes they drink what is called some kind of a toddy or banga, and then get intoxicated in the night. They are forgetting themselves. Actually, it is the celebration of the night, vigil of Shiva, in the sense that there is a darkness or a period between pralaya and manvantara. During that time, we are supposed to ideate. The same thing happens here, between our death and regeneration. What are you going to think about? What are you going to take with you? to Devaha and other places. See, best thoughts, ideations. That will help you to get regenerated and come back. But this whole idea, but instead of that, they completely fast on that particular day and then mortify their flesh, play cards so that they can wake up. Throughout the night they want to be awake, you know. Unfortunate. Anyway, how many of us can really take advantage of this? See, unless we realize the presence or divine presence of Shiva here, how can he, get his help there? Shiva is not there. Shiva is everywhere. The entire atmosphere, the whole nature thrills with that particular abstract contemplation of nature itself. We have about 4 or 5 minutes. Unfortunately, we have to deal with only certain aspects of Shiva. There are plenty of stories, in fact, legends.
Shiva is everywhere.
Those of you, yes, please.
Shiva is everywhere.
Yeah.
God is everywhere. Shiva is everywhere. God is on the form of Shiva.
Yes.
So what is Mount Kailash? What does it represent? So it
see,
is
look,
holy
place. You see, what is so great, the significant Mount Kailash? The significance is, see, that it is supposed to be the place of Aryas. This is what the student humbly feels. I may be wrong. It's beyond that Himalayas, or that place is supposed to be the place where the undying race resides. Therefore, it has been. And the summit of snow itself is always the whiteness of snow is associated with the cult. Where people who can do lots of magical feats also. Certain things which can't be seen, can be seen through that ice which is melting. Certain things are there. But this is what the student feels. I mean, you told it wrong. It's Mount Meru. You see, abode of gods, it is said. Or Swetadipa, that's also White Island, it's called. Therefore, it must have a significance.
Sir, how can the body remain without passion and lust? Like Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, all these gods, Buddha and all, they never had a wife, like they gave up their wives. But how could they remain without passion and lust?
How do you control passion and lust?
How could you remain without passion and control? How could you remain without passion and lust? They first had a wife and after that they stayed away from it. How could they remain from passion and lust?
I don't really follow.
How, various degrees of people are mixed up.
Yeah.
Gandhi first had wife, then he remained away from wife. Right. Buddha also had a wife, but he left wife. So how could these people remain without lust and passion?
No. See, there are some misunderstanding is there. It is not, Theosophy does not say, even Shiva does not say that you run away from life. You have to go through that Brahmacharya stage where you learn dharmas of a householder. There are in fact 10 dharmas, according to Dharma Shastra, as a householder. Then you fulfill it. There you can dharmati, then you don't have to, indulge in sensuous life. Unfortunately, sorry. We are leading a life of our sensuality or a personality where we indulge too much in passion and the karma. Can live a pure householder's life and then finally go to Vanaprastha stage and finally sannyas. Nobody asked you, a great person did not ask you to just run away to the forest. No. Wherever you are, you can practice that kind of contemplation. See, let's not understand this passion and desire only to fix it to wife and children. No. There are so many other things also. See, our desire goes, grows in what it feeds. Appetite grows in what it feeds. Therefore, we should control the desire. Sorry, control the desire nature. This is where it comes. Whole point is, we had in the last week a lecture beautifully brought out. What are the things that hinder our mind? Well, it is possible for us, even living in a body, to have the conscious existing spirit. You don't have to run away to the forest. If you run away to the forest, still thinking of your family and friends, what is the use? Your mind should be clear as to what is real, right, what is wrong, and what path I should follow. As long as you desire, ultimately, life begins in divinity, has to end in divinity. Anyway, after all, humanity is an emanation to divinity on its return path too. Even in the meantime, we are suffering here in the ocean of samsara, involved in it. All the time we are creating such karma as will bring us back here. See, the karma is so very merciful that gives us umpteen chances. Gives repeated birth to be learned in the school of life. You must understand, law works. As we think, so we become. Therefore, our thought has to be controlled. Gita says, true spirit, true. Wisdom of our true nature. What is that? True wisdom of spiritual nature is exempted from self-identification, attachment to wife, children and all that. But it also says, meditation on death, decay and sorrow. Then you will realize how anitya, impermanent is this samsara. You might be thinking, building castles in the air. But it's time, tomorrow will it be there? Tomorrow, are we going to be there? Can you say that we are going to be there next minute? We don't know. What can we say? Tell me. So from that point of view, it's not, living indulgent in sensuous life at all. Let not our mind become a playground for our senses. This is the mind controlling the senses. It's the other way about. It is where we have to put the reins. Time is almost up. We will just close this. See how beautifully the last passage explains. Their klesha is destroyed forever. Tanha's roots torn out. But stay, disciple, yet one word. Canst thou destroy divine compassion? Compassion is no attribute. It's a law of laws, eternal harmony. Eternal harmony. Where is Shiva? Shiva is there. Alas, said the shoreless universal deserts. This is the nature's abstract contemplation. Light of everlasting ray, fitness of all things. The law of love eternal. And then it says, this is for us to make it. The more the doubt become at one with it, time being melted in its being. That means become one with it. You're different. When you become melted with that, it becomes only one. The more thy soul unites with that cheese, the more thou shalt become compassionate. Thank you. Therefore, in one place in one book, if you go through Dawson's classical dictionary, there are more than 30-40 names given for Buddha. I didn't have time to read that.